B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Friday, November 1st, 2019. Your home for esports and gaming. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, is the single player game making a comeback? 2019 might say that they are. Plus, we're going to sit down with Dr. Amin Issa. Those conversations ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But we start today talking about BlizzCon. BlizzCon went down over the weekend, and there was a lot of big announcements. We had actually talked about this last week and kind of wondered whether or not there would be, you know, big announcements or riot police.
Which would it be?
I have to give it to Blizzard. They did strike a very conciliary tone.
Yeah.
Is that
conciliatory?
Conciliatory. Thank you. Yeah. Conciliatory words. Tone. Right out of the gate. And the first thing that they addressed was obviously the Blitzchung situation. And I think that they actually had a pretty interesting reaction. We've got some audio of it here.
I want to say a few words. You know, Blizzard had the opportunity to bring the world together in a tough Hearthstone esports moment about a month ago, and we did not. We moved too quickly in our decision making, and then, to make matters worse, we were too slow to talk with all of you. When I think about what I'm most unhappy about, there's really two things. The first one is we didn't live up to the high standards that we really set for ourselves. And the second is we failed in our purpose. And for that, I am sorry, and I accept accountability.
So I think that this was a really good way to start off BlizzCon.
Let's address the elephant in the room.
Address the elephant in the room. You know, there are protesters outside. Everyone had to walk past them as they were walking into the venue.
Yep.
So, you know, it was important that they address this. They couldn't go the entire time without addressing it, and it was nice that they put it out front. What they did not say was, we are reversing our decision.
Right.
We are changing any kind of course, and that has been met with round and fair criticism by the Twitter audience that exists out there.
It definitely has, but, you know, even Blitzchung himself at that point has come out and said that the 6-month suspension, even though it is a bit severe, is more in line with, you know, what he would have expected his own punishment to be.
Right. He didn't go into this expecting to not receive any punishment.
So, you know, with that said, I agree. I think that it was definitely the right thing for them to do, because we wondered how long this keynote would go on before they addressed it, or if they addressed it at all. And I think it really was important for them to do that, because in a room of people who are about to decide the fate of your next fiscal year, it's important to engender at least some sort of goodwill, or, you know, restore some of that confidence that people have in you as a company. And for you to come out and fall on the sword, essentially, I think is the best way to do it, because if you didn't say anything, the fallout would have been way worse.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think that, you know, Blizzard made the right move here. I think that will win some people back, but obviously will not win everyone back. I don't know what everyone expected, if they expected, you know, the Blizzard employees to come out on stage and go, yeah, free Hong Kong. But, like, no, that's not.
Yeah.
I don't. That's never going to happen. And I think what fans got is probably the best that they're going to get out of the company.
That's true.
There's a lot of announcements to get to here because we didn't just get, you know, an addressment of an addressing of the Blitzchung situation. We also got a lot of announcements. So we actually got a little bit of both.
Yeah. So I'm going to start this off because the first announcement that they did was the one I have been waiting, I feel like, forever to hear.
And this is how you win those other people over, by the way.
Exactly. Diablo 4, we get the launch trailer. We get an announcement video and then a gameplay trailer. To take a look at Diablo 4, this is a game that is now going back to kind of its gothic horror roots.
Very much so.
Diablo 1 and 2.
And not to say that 3 wasn't a dark game, but it had more in common visually with maybe, you know, World of Warcraft. Yeah. And it did seem, while it was still gothic tinged, it was very cartoony.
The edges were much more rounded out in Diablo 3.
Yeah, versus, the lady in this has a blood cape, guys.
She does. We see the return of Lady Lilith, who we have not seen since Diablo 2. She was actually the secret hidden final boss.
The mega boss.
Yes. That's pretty awesome to see her kind of coming back into the story. The whole game, I mean, we've already seen some gameplay of the barbarian, the sorceress, and the druid. Nice to see the druid coming back, by the way. That's a nice touch. I'm geeked. I'm in. Diablo 3 lost me. I wasn't super big on Diablo 3.
It was okay.
But that's what I was going to ask is that, you know, Diablo 4 is an announcement people have been waiting for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And as you guys, as fans of the series, is it something that right now, face value, you're like, I'm in? Or are you waiting for more?
I'm waiting for a little bit more. I did play Diablo 2 and I played Diablo 3. I was much more enthusiastic about Diablo 2 when I played it.
Oh, yeah.
But it was so long ago. I'm actually pretty excited for this, but I am sort of on the wait and see sort of train here.
I can understand it. I watched the gameplay bits that we saw. It shows that kind of Diablo, unique to Diablo gameplay, the thing that games like Path of Exile tried to copy. And I mean, they did okay, but it's not Diablo.
Yeah. You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're currently going over the announcements out at BlizzCon. And we got to move on here to World of Warcraft, the largest massively multiplayer online role-playing game ever made. Brand new trailer for a new expansion coming to WoW, The Shadowlands.
Yeah, so I won't spend too long on this because they didn't give us a whole lot of new information, just the title card, which is Shadowlands. And what we saw in the trailer is Sylvanas going to the Frozen Throne where the Lich King is, smashing his helm in half, which basically means now no one can control the undead. And we watch as the veil is torn between Azeroth, where the living are, and the Shadowlands, which is the land of the dead. And we know that whatever this story entails will have us going to the other side to pursue something.
Now, we have been to the other side many times. Anytime you die in that game, you go to the Shadowlands.
Technically, yes.
For at least a little bit. But it'll be interesting to see what the denizens of that world, how they exist.
Right, and I mean, there's this big shadowy figure that's behind Sylvanas in a bunch of shots. So it's still hard to know right now exactly what it's going to mean, but they're going to pull me back in, guys.
Really?
They might. I don't know how long I'll stay. You know, it was for a few months last expansion.
I mean, because this is probably the largest cataclysm to happen in the world since Cataclysm.
Yes, and one of the things that they mentioned in the keynote is a lot of the old sort of foes and storylines from Warcraft 3 have basically been tied up at this point. So I think this might actually end up being it's the first sort of big progression of lore that we've seen in a while.
Very interesting. We also got some Hearthstone announcements. There's a new expansion coming with a lot of dragons. That's fine. But
and they have a team fight tactics.
Yes, they also have their own version of team fight tactics, which looks it looks boring. But we got to get to Overwatch because Overwatch finally clarified a little bit about Overwatch 2. It's officially announced. It is a thing. It is happening.
It is a sequel.
And it is a sequel. So it does seem like it's an entirely separate game. However, Blizzard is going to the lengths to be able to make sure that original Overwatch players are not left behind in this new upgrade.
Yeah, and so basically what they showed off in the announcement a new really awesome cinematic trailer, which, by the way, just make the Overwatch movie at this point, Blizzard. Like, just
we know
do
you
it.
Want to.
We know you want to. Just do it. But every hero is getting a redesign, so every character in the game is getting an updated, getting a visual update. There's going to be a massive UI update, so the game itself will look different. And on top of that, there will be new PvP modes. But the biggest update in Overwatch 2 is there will be co-op and, from what we understand, single-player offline story mode missions that you will be able to play in Overwatch 2.
So you guys are the big Overwatch fans here on the show. I have to get your read of this. I mean, this is a pretty big deal. It seems like Blizzard is going very far out of their way to not split their audience around Overwatch, but I still don't understand how this doesn't end up splitting the audience.
It does. No matter what they do, it will split the audience. And here's what's so frustrating to me about it is that if this is merely a UI update and they're adding missions and all that type of stuff, just make it an update to what you already have.
Yeah, why not make it an update to the original game?
Yeah, because I don't necessarily see, and maybe I could be wrong, I don't necessarily see what makes this worth a extra, you know, full retail release, when especially other games and other competitive games in esports have this habit of releasing their content for free.
Robbie, real quick.
Look, all the stuff that they've showed in theory are things that I'm interested in, but what we've seen, besides just looking a little bit updated, doesn't seem like it's enough to charge people a new price for. It's what they should have been doing to begin with.
And on top of that, we have no indication that the original Overwatch is going free to play, which again puts an extra layer on top of this. If you're gonna have the sequel coming out and then you're still gonna have retail sales of the first one, I just think it may be a misstep, but I could be wrong. But it looks like you're gonna be paying more for more Overwatch.
In a word, are you upgrading to 2?
Well, I don't have a choice because I make a show about it.
Yeah, gonna have to.
All right, well, listen, we want to hear from you. Are you upgrading to Overwatch 2? What did you think of the announcements out of BlizzCon? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP, we'll sit down with Dr. Amin Issa. That conversation will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, are single players back? Are single player games officially back? That conversation is ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Are single player games finally coming back into style? Welcome back into Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on WXSM Tri-Cities, Tennessee, as well as ESPN Phoenix 620. You've been asking for it, and it's finally here. Checkpoint XP merch is officially available. We've got shirts, hats, hoodies, and mugs for Checkpoint XP, Low Team Damage, and The Other Identity. Plus, we've got a brand new shirt and hoodie that's available for a limited time this fall and holiday season. Check it out over at CheckpointXP.com/shop. Are single-player games finally coming back into style? Seems like 2019 has been a big year for the single-player games when, just recently, all of the talking heads seem to be declaring the death of the single-player game.
Yeah, EA specifically, didn't they say that people aren't interested in single-player games anymore?
Well, they did, and they've also talked about wanting to double down on their their annual shooters and their live service
and
games.
Surprise and mechanics. Don't forget surprise mechanics.
How could we?
And yet, this fall, I mean, this is just some of the games that we've seen come out in the fall. Control, Greedfall, Indivisible, Outer Worlds, Luigi's Mansion 3.
Death Stranding.
Death Stranding, Star Wars, Pokemon. That's a lot in the span of a season. It feels like we've gotten as many big time single player games as we get in some years recently.
Well, and also on top of that, the roadmap for a lot of the AAA titles, even coming out in 2020 and beyond, are massive single player experiences. So I think this concept of the single player game is dead is something that was trotted out from a investor profit margin point of view for a lot of people and a lot of companies.
Are you suggesting that it was, if we wish it true, then it will be so?
Probably.
If we can convince people single player is dead, then we can keep making Fortnite?
Yeah, probably. But here's the thing is, and I hate to say this, but I'm not sure if any of those styles of games move consoles. What has traditionally moved consoles have been single player gaming experiences and title exclusivity. That's what's moved consoles. And you're not going to get exclusive, you know, multiplayer games with microtransaction models. Why? Because the bottom line's not going to be
as
big.
I think that was one of the most refreshing things about a game like The Outer Worlds, where I load it up and it's got like five different menu options. I've got credits, exit, load game, continue, or new game. There's
none of them say multiplayer.
There's no multiplayer.
No store.
There's no marketplace. Like, I'm just like, oh, it's just me in the game. And I love that. But I think for developers, it puts them in a little bit more of a precarious position, because now the success or failure of your game, just like it has been for years and years and years, is literally how many units you move.
And that is kind of the thing, is now we're back to the old model of, if I sell a million copies of this at, you know, $60 a piece,
right?
Well, that's how much money I made. There is no room to make more down the line. I mean, obviously we can get back into the idea of, you know, paid DLC.
Yeah,
for,
no, if
for
you
their
make,
add-ons.
Look, if you make a good game, then I will buy your DLC. Pure and simple.
Yeah, I don't think I would hesitate to buy DLC for a game like The Outer Worlds.
No,
right?
No, not at all. But my point is that, like, that is now, you're asking developers to, you know, here's a big injection of cash when people start buying the game, and there will be another injection of cash when our DLC drops,
but
we're
there's
going
a ceiling.
Long periods of time where we're not having tons of money coming in off this project while still having to develop for it, because
sure.
I don't think people are ready to accept, like, the age of, like, bugs returning where things don't get patched and fixed. Do you think anyone would accept
that? No, nobody would accept that, but also the ability to be able to go back and fix those types of things. It's not like having the same amount of staff from building the game from the ground up. You're not working with a 200-person staff to fix bugs. So, yeah, it will be cheaper to do that. But I understand your point is that with a single-player experience, there's a ceiling to that. Eventually, this game will not make any more money.
Even if you do microtransactions in a single-player game, you're not going to be able to leverage them the same way you can leverage them in an online environment.
What you do see, though, and what we have, and only recently has this become really a thing, is if you create a great single player game, you are establishing some longevity down the line for a remake. And that is something that we have seen now time and time again.
Or sequels, or... Right, yeah.
Right. You can start to, you can use these kinds of games to start crafting a new IP. I feel like it's very hard to use a game like Fortnite. Fortnite might be a bad example because it's done very well for itself. But The Outer Worlds will help you establish a universe and a new IP that you can run with. More so than I feel like things like... Than like Fortnite does. I feel like Fortnite works as what it is.
But I think this is part of the problem, is that people are using Fortnite as a measuring stick, when I think every expert has agreed that Fortnite can't happen
lightning
again.
In a bottle.
It literally cannot and probably will not happen again until the next iteration of whatever the next microtransaction or whatever after it comes out, and that's the next flash in the
Because if it was just about the game format, then every game who has come in the wake of Fortnite trying to copy Fortnite's success would also, not just as much, but they would also be able to have some sort of success. And I mean, yes, you've got Realm Royale out there. You've got different kind of flavors of Fortnite. But what was that one something Heights that...
Radical Heights.
Radical Heights.
Epic failure. The second failure from Cliffy B.
Sorry, Cliffy B.
We love you, but both of those, that and Lawbreakers, did not work, and there were two games clearly trying to capitalize on the popularity of two very popular formats, being character-based shooter a la Overwatch, right, and the Battle Royale genre a la Fortnite.
Yeah, exactly. And so the fact that it's not just the gameplay format that is appealing to people, I think you're right that Fortnite can be kind of put into this category unto itself. You know, like games like World of Warcraft that had at one point 14 million subscribers to it. It's in a category unto itself. And what is nice, what I think is really heartening about this, about these, this list of single player games that have come out this year, is that not every developer is chasing that brass ring. Not every developer is trying to make Fortnite or leverage some kind of Fortnite situation to line their own pockets. They understand that it's lightning in a bottle, yeah, and they're going back and just making games that they like. And I think that that is applicable to games like Control, Greedfall, The Outer Worlds, Death Stranding. They're all taking chances in 2019 by kind of making an older style game.
More than that, I think they're all different. They're all unique. When I look at something like Luigi's Mansion 3, The Outer Worlds, and Death Stranding,
three games
that are out within a couple weeks of each other.
Yeah.
Those are all incredibly different games, which instead of like what we've seen over the last few years, which is the glut of samey,
yes,
everyone just trying to do the same thing a little bit better. There's creativity and a uniqueness with single player games that has been sorely lacking.
No, I totally agree. And I also think that a game like Death Stranding probably couldn't have worked within the last 10 years. It's a game that probably could only work in 2019. But listen, we want to hear from you. What do you think? Do you think that the return of the single-player game bodes well for the future of game development? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint _ XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to sit down with Dr. Amin Issa. Stick around. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome into Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming. We are joined once again by friend of the show, Dr. Amin Issa, founder and war chief of science at Mobalytics. Amin, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back, guys. Have a great show.
So, you know, before we jump into why we had you on the show for today, the first thing I'd like to do is, could you just give people a reminder of what it is that you guys do at Mobalytics?
Yeah, sure. So at Mobalytics, we're a, you can think of us like a gaming companion, and we automatically analyze all your data, tell you your strengths and weaknesses, and give you insights on what you can do to be better and just to have a better gaming experience overall.
And you've worked in the past with Riot, specifically with League of Legends, and more recently with Teamfight Tactics.
Yes. So, I mean, we work with Riot's games. They have an open API, and they're very warm and welcoming to the entire developer community. So anyone can work with Riot. They have great documentation on their site and everything. So nothing special about the way we work with Riot. We'd like to think that, you know, the stuff that we make is high quality and we strive for that, but anyone can, yeah, with enough willpower and know-how, can do the projects that they want to do with Riot's properties.
Well, I do have to compliment you too on some of the work that you've done specifically with League of Legends. My co-host Norris and myself, since talking to you last time, we've gotten into kind of using the Mobalytics a little bit and trying to see, you know, why exactly it is that we're terrible. I'd like to say that it's improving my game vastly, but it really, it's just getting you to think about some of the little things that are very easy to forget to do. It's so easy in a game like League of Legends, where games take 30 or 40 minutes sometimes, to get out and just say, oh God, my team was trash, and you know, it wasn't my fault. And then you go look at some of your statistics and you're like, all right, well, maybe I did only drop 2 wards this game, so maybe it is my fault a little bit.
I think the 2 biggest ones are warding and farming. Most people just... And it's so funny. I think League allows us not just to see that in ourselves, but also those are lessons you take outside of the Rift with you as well. And you try and establish more of a locus of control for yourself, not just in the game, but you know, you start to apply that philosophy to yourself outside the game as well, and say, what can I change? What can I do?
Well, the reason that we brought you on the show here today is Riot these past few weeks have been in all the headlines for releasing their announcements that they are developing not one, not two, not three, four, five, or even 6, but 7 new projects. And one of those projects is the Legends of Runeterra, which is going to be a trading card game meant to compete with the likes of Hearthstone and Magic the Gathering Arena. And Amin, you and your company Mobalytics have actually helped in some capacity with that project. What way has Mobalytics sort of been able to help Riot get that off the ground?
Well, first I'd like to say that I'm very, very excited about all the games they're making. I was like a kid in a candy store when they revealed those games, right? You know, I think League has been such a staple of our last 10 years, right? As gamers, you know, and it's just this all-encompassing MOBA. You've got Heroes of the Storm, you've got Dota 2, but like League is just so massive. And when it came online, it was like they said, hey, we want to make this into a forever game right from the start. And to see them expand into other games is really cool for me, you know. And I feel like in the last few years, maybe Blizzard has been a little disappointing. And believe me, I'm the biggest Blizzard fanboy. I've got Garrosh's statue, Illidan's statue, all those expensive ones at home. I've got Frostmourne. So, you know, so, and I really do see kind of Riot taking up this mantle and creating these high quality games. And some of the decisions they've made with Runeterra, I don't know how closely you followed like their business model decisions and what you think of it as a group, but I'd love to talk about that at some point.
Well, I think right now might be a good time to talk about that. I mean, one of the primary critiques of things like Hearthstone or Magic the Gathering Arena is that at the end of the day, you're buying card packs, hoping to get the cards that you want. And at the end of what we're seeing, especially in the online space, is that isn't too far away from loot boxes, which are a major, major concern right now in the digital space. But it sounds like Riot Games is going kind of the opposite approach of saying, no, that doesn't make sense to have to buy, you know, $100 worth of packs every time a new set comes out. Why don't you just buy the cards that you want? Which, I mean, that's basically the model they've used for League of Legends. Hey, here's a selection of free champions that you can use. If you want to buy the champions to have them all the time, you can, and you can earn your way towards that. I'd love to get your thoughts on it, actually.
Yeah, I mean, so it's interesting. We have a small division in the family. My younger brother is a Dota 2 fan, right?
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
And he thinks that, like, he doesn't like Riot's business model for League. He says, like, you know, either give me all the champs or don't give me anything. I'm willing to pay, right? And I can see that point of view, but at the same time, I actually think that it has a lot of pluses, right? Because you're basically just saying, I want to play with these things. And it does several things for the new player experience as well. It says that it allows a new player to just focus on several things. And most of the time, realistically, most players can't play well more than a handful of champs. And so it offers them the ability to always be acquiring new things,
yep,
and collecting it. And it also offers the ability to explore an open territory because you don't have something. Now, you can say that you can do that when you have all the champions for free anyways, who's stopping you from exploring new territory? It's been the commonplace in games and fighting games and whatnot. But there is something about that commitment process that the human mind values, right? And sees in a different way.
Well, especially right now, if you were to, you know, buy League of Legends today and have all of the champions, you'd have 145 champions out the gate ready to go. The barrier for entry of that game would go so far up. The value of the way they do it is, you know, you join the game for your first time. You've got, you know, 8 to 10, 12 champions that you can pick from because those are the ones that are on the free rotation. And then as you start playing and learning the game, one of those champions, eventually you're like, you know what? I really enjoyed playing that champion and I was kind of good at them. I'm going to buy that champion. That's where you start.
Or you see somebody else play a champion and think, wow, I want to be able to play as good as what that person did. Let me give that one a try.
Exactly. To try to get into it with just 145 champions from the word go, I feel like would be impossible.
I agree. And forcing that commitment from yourself to do that, like you're putting down your hard-earned points or your money to do that, means that you have a promise, a pact with yourself that I'm going to play this champion and I'm going to learn this champion.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different than just playing a champion and say, oh, I don't like it. You know, and just move on.
I mean,
right?
I'm going to go back to the early days of League of Legends. One of the first champions that I really got into playing was Fiddlesticks back in the day because...
Ooh, me too.
but you know, that first time that I popped the ult, jumped on a bunch of people and got like a triple kill, I'm like, oh, okay, this is my champion now. This was awesome. I'm in. And you're right. Once I had put down my points to kind of take ownership of that champion, and I don't want to make this sound like Riot or some kind of, you know, a group of saints who are doing this for the benefit of the player base. They make money hand over fist doing it this way.
At the end of the day, yeah.
I just don't know that doing it the other way would actually benefit them or anyone else.
Yeah, especially as the list continues to grow, right? You know, I mean, there's multiple reasons why they're the number one game in the space, but I think I have no problems with the model, and then the cosmetics, people start to build attachments to specific champions, which are even stronger because of the level of commitment it takes to buy and play a champion, right? So it works. I think that my brother's being a jaded hater, but I think it's easy to say that it works for both sides. You can do it that way, you can do it the other way. I don't see the issue. Like if Street Fighter were to go free to play today and everyone would start with Ryu and Ken, and maybe two other fighters, and then you could pick and start committing, and they just kept updating the Street Fighter engine we were using instead of launching a new game. I think that's a perfectly viable business model for a fighting game.
Well,
right?
And to be honest, we may see that in the near future with Riot's fighting game.
I
don't imagine that they're going to take a completely new monetization model to their fighting game or to whatever comes of this Diablo-esque game that they're doing or to their first-person shooter. And I actually kind of want to get your thoughts on this because I don't think it's exaggerating to say that Riot's kind of declared war on the whole of the video gaming industry right now. I'm wondering, in your mind, where does Riot get the huevos? Where do they get the plums to basically just say, bring it?
So I think war is a bad word for this. I actually think everyone who works at Riot has an immense amount of reverence and respect for and are influenced by the games they've played. Mm-hmm. And they just want to create those things, right? And when you're a company that has found a rocket fuel of success, basically, that you were not expecting, well, you start to think, well, what are we going to do, right? And we want to make a card game. We all love card games. The group starts to make a card game. Well, we want to make a fighting game. We love fighting, right? And so those inspirations come in and say, like, what's next? What do we do next? I'm not there. I don't know. But I assume that's the kind of the emotion, because that's what I would do if I was in those shoes. And all of a sudden, I found myself not limited by resources, right? So I don't think it's an issue of war. I think it's more of an issue of we really want to explore these things and we're very ambitious and we love this stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
want to recreate those experiences.
Very well put. We're currently talking with Dr. Amin Issa, founder and war chief of science at Mobalytics. I wanted to round back really quick to Mobalytics. And you had mentioned that right now a lot of what you've done has been with League of Legends and teamfight tactics. And helping players to analyze their play styles and their patterns. How were you able to take what you learned from those two games in order to help Riot with Legends of Runeterra?
So, Yeah, we learned a lot from those two. Not just a lot. We learned a lot from those two games. A lot of it was two major lessons we learned. One was how to give people information and insights. I mean, the amount of people who our product has gone through so many different iterations over the last 2 years, right? And one of the things we discovered was that people wouldn't understand simple things like this scores from 0 to 100 and what that means, right? And learning to keep things as simple as possible and think through the entire user experience from the many different perspectives of users, from that platinum player trying to get to diamond, to that silver player who's stuck, to just the casual person, right? I think this was the most valuable thing that we learned and we kept in mind when making this product. It helped that we didn't have mountains of data and a lot of things to work with, and we could keep it simple. But that was one of the main things. And we didn't, what our role in the whole thing was that Riot was looking for someone from the third party community to help with the launch so they could keep their parts light and focus on making a great game. And we were lucky enough to be one of the people they were thinking about, and we put in an application and we managed to have the honor of doing that work. And it was very, very exciting to be a part of that. And, you know, we love the game as soon as we got to play it. And I mean, kind of we've loved League of Legends.
I was going to say, as a fan of Riot, having played League of Legends for as long as you have, you know, seeing the announcement that Ryan's like, hey, we're coming out with 7 new projects and you get to help in some way make one of those.
So we didn't know all that those like? All we knew is that there's this game and this is our role there. So we were definitely not involved in the whole shebang or anything like that. It's very simple for us. We put in a small request that we tried our best to make look as appealing as possible, and we were told that we're gonna select you guys, and so come try out this game. We only knew that this one game existed and play, and we sat down together in a room and said, okay, this is how we're going to do it. And these are the parts that we're going to put into our platform. Twitch extension was number one, right? Because the viewer experience is so critical to the launch of a new game. We've seen over the last 2 years that Twitch is the kingmaker of games. Basically Apex comes out, has 50,000 views on Twitch, goes up to 150. All of a sudden Apex is the new hot game. Repeat ad nauseum for almost every game that's come out, right? So they knew the viewing experience was going to be critical, and we said that we've made a Twitch extension before and we can make a pretty good Twitch extension here too. And so, you know, a lot of talented and hardworking people on our team worked with them to make sure that the Twitch viewing experience was as perfect as possible. I don't know how much of that you caught or you used while you were watching the game, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on the extension we created.
Well, I mean, so far everything that we've seen out of the game has been, you know, aces. I mean, I can't tell you how excited I am, and I kind of wanted to ask you, as someone who played Magic growing up, and I used to play competitively, and then I became a huge League of Legends fan. I had a phase where I played a lot of Hearthstone. You've gotten to, you know, see a bit of this game now, and can you tell me and the listeners out there, how excited do we need to be for Legends of Runeterra?
Yeah. None of you got into the preview?
No, not this time, unfortunately. Oh, a little bit of a sore subject.
I'm not even mad about it.
I'm going to, you know, and I'm not just saying this because I got to work on it or anything like that. It's a great game. I never got introduced to Magic growing up. I grew up in Lebanon, and physical card games growing up in a remote village in Lebanon, like, got about as much chance of that as getting a pentakill on Soraka or something like that, right? So it's just not happening. And so when I moved to the U.S., I heard rumors of Magic, but I didn't know what a card game was, and I had no friends that were super into a card game. So basically, my introduction to card games was Hearthstone, and I won't forget the first time I played Hearthstone. I didn't know what it was. I downloaded it because it was Blizzard's new game, and I was in the beta. And I had a business trip to Slovenia at the time, and I had it on my laptop, and I reached the hotel and I started to play. I remember this is like a cross-country flight and I'm pretty tired, and I said, I'll play a little and I'll go to shower and I'll sleep. Before I knew it, it was midnight, and I had started 7 or 8, and I'm like, oh fuck, okay. So I jumped in the shower and I'm like, I'll play a little more. before I knew it, it was 3 a.m. Yeah. Okay. I'll play a little more. and then I was like, it was 5 a.m. and I'm like, I have to be up at 8, like at the office at 8 where I have to be. I'll just like do some push-ups and stuff to get my brain going, get a workout in, and then play a little more, take a shower and go to the office just to freshen up. And that's what I did. And I played. And then at the office, I had this laptop out, and in meetings, I was playing Hearthstone while listening.
Wow.
That became a de facto thing of mine. Actually, playing games during calls was something that I started to do a lot. And it just helped me think. It really helped me not just think, but keep my mind from being distracted on multiple things. And because some of these things were autopilot. Of course, I can't play ranked, but I can just like, in Hearthstone, you take your turn and whatever.
Yeah.
And so I played the whole day in the office, and then I came home and I played till I passed out of exhaustion at like 10 p.m. And that was my first experience with Hearthstone. So I hadn't slept for like 30 hours. So I was hooked. And I went on to, you know, try and master Arena. I remember I spent like $100 one weekend trying to understand how to get good at Arena.
Ooh,
you know, you have to like spend $2.
Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, and then I was legend like every season for the first till Dr. Boom came out. Then I stopped for a while and I came back and played a couple of legend seasons once in a while. But I feel like Hearthstone kind of lost its way. It probably coincided with when Brode left and when Activision realized that Hearthstone is a huge cash cow.
Yeah.
And kind of focused more on the casual player experience and the making loot boxes and people getting more and more expensive decks and just randomness in the game. I lost interest. I couldn't keep playing Hearthstone. I'd turn it on once in a while, but it never did much. I feel like then when I started Mobile Books, I started to play with the people here. They loved Magic, so they got me into Magic. And Magic is very complex. I'm not as attached to the world, but I love the depth and the creativity. And so I realized, okay, I want to learn a little bit of Magic. I'm not by no means an expert. I played Magic Arena online, and I understand the basics, but I know like the rare cards like Black Lotus and some ridiculous stuff and what they do and why they're so rare, but I'm not a Magic expert. I'm very much a noob at Magic. But what a lot of us agree with internally is, because we've all had the luck of being able to play, is that, you know, Legends of Runeterra takes the perfect pieces from Magic and Hearthstone and gives you just enough of each so that you feel like it's not determined by luck. Card games have enough luck in it, and I have enough creativity to make different kind of decks that have different themes, but also there's the interactivity in between rounds, right? So basically I can, how familiar are you guys with the mechanics of the game?
A good bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So we put out a few infographics to try and explain like the complexity of the turns. So when you first start, like me being primarily a Hearthstone player, I didn't really know how to get used to the, you know, I take a turn, you take a turn, I can play my unit after you attack, right? So it adds all these different layers of decision making that I previously was not accustomed to.
Right. In Hearthstone, once you've passed your turn, you know you don't have to do anything again until your following turn, whereas it takes some elements of Magic where there are definitely instant speed things that you can do on your opponent's turn as well.
Yeah, and Hearthstone is so much better for like, I'm going to play my turn and I'll just do some work, Slack, or pop open email while I'm waiting, right? And so you can still do that in Runeterra. I can vouch for that. Maybe not as well, but you can still do that in Runeterra. But having that constant, like, you're not playing alone anymore. You have to respond. People can deny your counterspell like mid-turn. You have to think whether do I want to attack first before they get a chance to play, or do I want to play my strong unit then attack?
Right.
That's all these layers of strategy that you need to also put in. So it feels like a much deeper and more rewarding experience when you're playing. I had to get used to like picking my blockers. So just all those different things, but the game is still fast enough and easy enough to get into, and beautiful with the animations, the attachment, the lines that come out of the characters, that you feel like you're playing enough Hearthstone. That's the thing I always missed from Magic. I wasn't super attached to the the world, right? Because I never grew up with it, and I couldn't like associate with the old school card art. It looked like some of the old school D&D art. I much preferred like Warcraft's world. I grew up, I played a ton of WoW, right? So it's understandable. But I have a very big attachment to League of Legends, and like when you put Garen in, and he's got another Vanguard unit in there, and he tells him Captain Crown Guard, and he says, "No, please call me Garen." You know, it makes me really excited. It makes me feel like I'm watching a Saturday morning cartoon when I was a kid, right? Like,
and it's a world that you're familiar with and that you can enjoy.
It's like,
you know, that actually,
Cyclops or Captain America or something. Yeah.
Right. That actually transitions really well into my last question here, is just to ask, you know, with League expanding into, you know, so many different games and the IP beginning to spread, I just got to ask, who's your all-time favorite League of Legends champion or character?
I don't know, man. There's a lot of good ones. So probably my most played and my favorite is like Vi, right? Like,
yes!
I play a ton of Vi. Is amazing.
It's perfect. I love Vi and Jinx. Jinx is my all-time favorite, and we're about to get an anime about them, so that's exciting.
Yeah, the anime looks really, really cool. But, I mean, I have other favorites. Garen, Darius is really cool. Udyr. These are, you know, champs I played. Jax, if I only had a real weapon, right?
Yeah.
Like, these are, Annie was great, one of my favorites in Petha. So they've got a lot of really cool characters. And you know, Vi is just probably the one I played the most. And I just loved her moveset. It's just such a cool moveset.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you giving us some of your time today. Dr. Amin Issa, the founder and war chief of science of Mobilytics, has been our guest here today. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time.
It was a pleasure to be here. You guys are always fun to talk to, so thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Dr. Issa for his time. For full interviews, visit our website over at checkpointxp.com. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a wide collection of podcasts and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday live at 4 p.m. Eastern, live at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Just one too many lives in there. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Brand management by Chad Callahan. And, of course, my co-hosts who pulled double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP Daily, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's A. Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.